Every time we read the Quran or we do anything, we say Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful. It's something that we're taught to repeat only so that we can internalize the feelings of how our Lord is gracious and merciful. But it's actually tested when you need it most. And in times of darkness, in times of unease, is where you start to realize how His mercy is actually playing out.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Today on In Good Faith, we get to hear from someone who has stepped through some remarkable doors that were opened for him, even though there were difficulties along the way. And I just really admire him for how he has followed what he felt like was God's path for him. In studio with me today are Heather Bigley, our senior producer.
Hello.
And James Sturdivant, our producer.
Hello, hello.
As you heard in the opening quote, Imam Azhar Subedar has really adopted a life mission of explaining his own faith and spreading understanding.
Yeah, he is the imam at the Islamic Association of Collin County in Plano, Texas. But over his career since 9/11, he has worked with the White House. He's worked with the state government of Florida in representing to all kinds of people what Islam is and also working with others to better understand and solve community problems.
Along the way, you're going to hear a beautiful and I think very vivid description of his first pilgrimage to Mecca as part of the Hajj.
Yeah, we're going to jump into this interview with the imam discussing how his upbringing wasn't as religious as perhaps it could have been.
I come from a very diverse background. My parents are from two different continents. My mom from Africa, my dad from India. They met up and married in England and thereafter migrated to Canada, where I was born. We grew up trying to become a part of the society in which we also then compromised certain things for ourselves. There were the seasonal observances and sometimes the daily observances, but the emphasis was not placed on it. So in short, we did not grow up in a religious home and a religious environment as one would anticipate it to be.
So at what point did you begin to really personally connect with faith and the Quran?
So my grandmother used to visit her sons in Canada, and when she would come by to my father and stay with us, there was a common theme of her emphasizing that we take religion on a bit more seriously than what we were currently doing. And she also stressed to my father that my brother or I should take up the religion as a full commitment by memorizing the Quran and living out a religious lifestyle and propagating that to others in the faith. And it was something that, you know, my father didn't take seriously. And once we heard about it, we didn't take seriously either. However, my father's childhood friend who lived on the other side of the city, his son went off to England to memorize the Quran. And my brother, being closely the same age as him, felt the need to go off. And then the domino effect, I also went. And so it just started from there.
And once you've memorized that and can recite that, is it Hafiz? Is that the word for someone who's done that?
Yes, a Hafiz is someone who has memorized and grasped the entire Quran. And the term Hafiz is more like a protector of the Quran, someone who is safekeeping it and safeguarding it.
In your mind, in your heart.
In your mind and in your heart, yes.
Yeah, well, that's beautiful. Well, the word Islam, I've understood, means submission. And we live in a culture here in the U.S. where it's very individualistic. We don't love to be told what to do. Talk to me about how you think about learning submission to God and why that's good and what the benefits are.
I think it's a very misconstrued understanding of submission in our society today, because we live in a country where freedom is amplified, where you have freedom to say what you want to say and preach, and you have the freedom to be who you want to be. However, what we fail to realize is under the premise of freedom, we all are still submitting to something, if not surrendering to something. So Islam is submission and not surrendering. The difference is in surrendering, you have no choice. Your options are limited, if not none. And you just accept the status quo. It's like a boxer being boxed into the corner of the ring. They have no choice either to just call it quits or, you know, keep on taking the beats. Many surrender or submit to their carnal desires or to following a certain path or way. If you're committed to a certain player or team, you submit your life, your time, your finances to that team. Whereas in submission is where your intellectual faculties and everything else voluntarily submit to the Lord, knowing that the Lord knows better than I do for myself. And He knows what's best for me when it comes to my individual life, my family life, my work ethics, my prayer and obligations. He knows better than I. Allah tells us in the Quran, have you seen the person who made their God their desires? I think there could be much discussion on what freedom truly entails and what that really looks like.
Yeah. And that we live with the consequences of what we do choose. I was intrigued on your website that it said, what if you could experience Islam or experience the Quran? Is that something that happened to you on the way to becoming a spiritual teacher and leader, that you had a religious experience that makes you who you are?
Life is a journey, and each of us have our unique journey. It wasn't like I was enthusiastic about getting out there and learning the religion. And it was something I felt that, you know, my brother's doing and I look up to my brother. So why not do the same? And he's looking up to his best friend. Why not do the same? But my journey of life is interesting because in short, 2000, November, I graduated. 2001, I was traveling. 9/11 happened. The perception of what an imam meant went down into the gutters. But then where Islam stood, Islam went into the gutters. And to make it worse, in the Muslim community, the job and the responsibilities of an imam shifted greatly. People talk about moving the goalpost per se, the entire field changed, not just the goalpost. It was really difficult trying to acknowledge and accept and embrace the reality. I ended up moving to Florida, where I was the first scholar imam from Miami to Tampa on the west coast of Florida. So serving in the community of Fort Myers and Punta Gorda and Port Charlotte as an imam, but also having an influence on Sarasota and Bradenton, Naples and Bonita, and this entire region helped me understand the importance of submitting to God and having God give you the opportunities to display that submission to Him. And irrespective of your time, place, or circumstances, that relationship is essential. It's integral to your existence. And it's meaningful for you. You commit to your Lord and establish a relationship with Him, which you wish you would have done sooner. It's like, if I'm going to go meet Messi, I'm not going to go in these clothing. I'd rather wear a jersey. And, you know, I would kind of show him my loyalty per se, right?
Right.
It's not about just doing Islam. It's about being a Muslim. It's a whole different level.
In the little I have read of the Quran, I see over and over God the Merciful, Allah the Merciful. Have you felt those mercies on that difficult path?
It's easy to speak it. Like every time we read the Quran or we do anything, we say Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful. Mm. It's something that we're taught to repeat only so that we can internalize the feelings of how our Lord is gracious and merciful. But it's actually tested when you need it most. And in times of darkness, in times of unease, when you're able to reach out and grasp for Ar-Rahman and Ar-Rahim, gracious and the most merciful, is where you start to realize how His mercy is actually playing out. You no longer see your problems and predicaments as problems, but you see them as doors and opportunities to get somewhere where He wants you to be. So it's going from knowing His mercy to actually embracing His mercy. It's two different worlds.
What are the issues today? I mean, we've come hopefully a little bit improved from 9/11, and yet then things keep taking turns back and forth. What does the Muslim community in the U.S. face today? And then how can those of us in the majority help alleviate those?
So I'll just summarize 22 years of my service to give credibility for where to answer your question.
Okay.
2003, I was invited by the White House, President Bush, to become a part of the White House faith-based community initiatives. I worked with Governor Bush in 2004 for Hurricane Charlie, a response team. I was part of the Florida Department of Education as a sole Muslim advisor for over 12 years, I was able to participate in Bernie Sanders' campaign, Hillary Clinton's campaign. I got to meet with Bill Clinton. And I'm also currently serving as a member of the White House and community outreach team under President Biden. I also gave the inaugural prayer for Biden in his inaugural prayer ceremony. This was the path that was laid out for me when it came to civic engagement. When it came to interfaith, it went from visiting local churches and synagogues to lecturing to giving Shabbat services to speaking at the FLAG, which is the headquarters of Scientology in Clearwater. This was also a separate path that I felt that was paved for me from God to represent Islam. In the midst of terror, in the midst of wars, in the midst of Islamophobia and Islamic extremism, I had an opportunity as a scholar, as someone born in the West, to not just meet with people from various faiths and government levels, but to also exemplify and represent my faith for what it was. And I felt that was very important because in the absence of me representing my faith is still hijacked and held hostage by people who feel they know what my faith is all about. Besides, Islamophobia is a $1.5 billion industry in America today. So in 2015, after serving as an imam for 8 years at that mosque, I left. I started traveling the country, giving lectures on Sharia law, what it's about. I had already met with a Jewish fellow named Bob Gary when I was presenting on Islam at a church in Longboat Key. He came from his synagogue next door and he posed a very strong question, which many people in the audience were offended by, but I was not. And that led to us getting to know each other. For this man, as a Jew, had learned about Islam from 1995, traveled the world, going to Muslim countries, meeting with Muslim imams and everyone else to figure out what Islam was. And now he and I are now standing on podiums in front of 700 people talking about what the Quran is about. Today, we have finished writing a book, which is about to be published. It's called I Am the Other, where we discuss Sharia law. And we discuss the importance of understanding Islam for what it is. He's not in favor of Islam. He brings the opposite perspective on what Islam is seen as, especially here in the West. Now, that is what we're working on and what I'm working on only because in light of what we're seeing in France, the yes. hatred against Islam, that hijab was banned for French athletes. Where in England right now, riots are happening, businesses are being burned, mosques are being threatened. This hatred is targeting Muslims across the West. And I feel it's now my calling and my path to ensure that I'm able to bring forth an understanding of what Islam is. Muslims need to today understand their faith for what it is and not allow others to explain it for what it's not. And they need to become those representatives of the Quran, like living the Quran. So we have great challenges before us and they're only amplifying with time as religion and race is being used as a means of either putting one party, one side up and putting another side down.
So it sounds like it would be helpful, for instance, for me, for someone in the Christian majority, that before I believe what I hear other people saying, I shouldn't make those judgments without knowing some Muslims and interacting and going to the mosque or the masjid and having someone over to my home. It seems like if I get to know someone, that's the biggest antidote to the violence or hatred.
100%. And we're living in a very antisocial environment today where loneliness is plaguing the world, where people feel disconnected and secluded. It's easy then to brainwash someone. And so getting to know someone for who they are and not what someone told you that they are is essential for all of us. If we want to be in peace, like the question may be posed, what's in it for me? It would be the peace knowing that you're not the person I thought you were. And then when you find the humanity factor that we're the same, we're working towards the human aspect of bringing people together and getting to know the other and also to get to know about the other's faith and belief for what it is. So it's a huge undertaking, but you're right. we need to get out there and just talk.
Well, and it eliminates fear.
It does.
We don't make good judgments when we're operating out of ignorance and fear.
But just for the sake of clarification, we try to understand religion from the actions of people, right?
Like, yeah.
In a world of 2 billion Muslims, 25% of the global population today, when a person says, do you know a Muslim? I know there's a Abu Bakr Baghdadi, there's a Ismail Haniyeh, there's a Osama bin Laden. But you don't know them, you know about them, and you know about them from the angle of whoever told you to know them, and that's fine. But Islam isn't a person. Islam is a religion. And when we're able to separate the two, then it's easy to say these are criminals rather than Islamic faith and Muslims around the world are out to do X, Y, and Z.
I'm Stephen Cap Perry. You're listening to In Good Faith. More in just a moment.
I'm Stephen Cap Perry, host of In Good Faith. We have another podcast in our BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Appleseed. It's a way to take a journey anytime you would like with stories. Nationally known storytellers telling everything from folktales and fairy tales, personal stories and family tales. It's a great way to get everybody laughing or thinking about some particular topic. And it almost always leads to conversations in the family. If you hit pause after a story and say, what did you think about that? And boy, what does that remind you of? That is a fun time to get to share each other's stories. And that's what The Appleseed does. Check out the podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to In Good Faith. I'm speaking with Imam Azhar Subedar about how he brings understanding to his community about Islam.
What are you hoping to see in the next generation and the one after that as fruit of the work that you're doing now?
As Muslims, we're taught that our job as humans are custodians of this earth. We're supposed to be the caretakers, and we're supposed to hand it over better to the next generation so they can do a better job than we did. It's our duty and responsibility to start planting seeds of change. And then the generation that comes after us, our children, and then their children, will be able to see a distinction between two different mindsets and ethics and ways. And that's when they'll be able to follow the inclination of their heart, where they can choose love over hatred, where they can choose right over wrong, where they can choose inclusivity over, you know, division. All these things can be possible when a person knows what the alternative is.
You're seeing things on this huge global scale, which I think is obviously the viewpoint of God that we should all aspire to. Uh-huh. And yet we each have just the world within us, just on a personal level. What brings you the most joy about your faith?
What brings me the most joy in today's world, in these times, in this time of my life, is knowing that when I'm feeling unease, discomfort, I have someone to turn to, and that's my Lord. He's there. It's not like I have to go search for him. He's there. And that relationship not only grows, but then that relationship inspires you. I've been through a lot in life personally, but also in society, having opportunities, for example, to be part of the Orlando shooting response team. Being there at a time when a Muslim perpetrated this crime, allegedly, he pledged allegiance to ISIS and he did all this massacre. And what would make me walk into the fire? Like, why would I walk there? It was just meant to be that I was in Orlando, that I was by the site, that my friend got the phone call that the clergy team is being formed and they need me down by the ORMC hospital. And I was right there. When God and you become close, then he uses you as a tool for goodness. And some of the most greatest experiences I've had to reaffirm my faith and to reassure myself that my God is with me, my Lord is with me, were in times of difficulties and distress, especially during the Orlando shooting response team, when I was able to comfort a grandmother who was flanked by two priests and she was constantly passing out and she saw me, she called me, and we hugged each other and cried, is because faith motivates us to be better versions of ourselves, which then emit positivity that others can feed off of as you feed off their positivity. And so I find comfort in knowing my Lord is there when I need him. He's there to inspire me and push me forward when the time calls for it. And I find solace in times of distress and difficulty in just remembering his name.
I wonder if you would talk to me just for a minute about this beautiful injunction for those who are able to make a pilgrimage at least once in their life to Mecca, the Hajj.
I just came back in end of June or July, and it's an amazing experience. So I go as a scholar to serve the pilgrims, to help guide them through the pilgrimage and the obligations and how to fulfill everything so that spiritually they feel that they've completed their pilgrimage. And alongside, I perform my own pilgrimage.
Can you remember what you felt the first time to be there in the place where those events of scripture are, where that happened?
Every time you go there, it's a different, unique feeling. It's so different, it can't be explained. You're in awe because you see these pictures of Mecca and the Holy Mosque, the Grand Mosque. But once you're there and you're in front of it, it doesn't look anything like the pictures. And the feeling is very different. It's a feeling of peace. It's a feeling of serenity. It's a feeling of closeness that helps you strengthen your resolve. And okay, I'm by God's house. I'm going to knock that door. I'm going to call on to him and pray to him. It just boosts your faith. It boosts your morale. And then again, around people, thousands, millions at times, people of all walks of life, with all different languages, different race and cultures coming together to do the same thing and helping one another along the way, it's a beautiful experience. It can't be explained by words. I think that's the best way to say it.
That makes sense. It seems like it could be overwhelming and beautiful. Mm-hmm. With the chance to serve on White House committees, looking towards interfaith engagement or whatever might need to be done. Are you hopeful about those? I sometimes could see like it's a bunch of people meeting, but will anything come out of it? Have you been able to see positive forward movement because of those types of committees and interfaith thought and conversation?
In Islam, we're taught that the job of the messenger and the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and rather all the prophets, peace be upon them, was to present the message and to convey it both verbally and by example. So on the premise of that, I feel interfaith is and civic engagement both are greatly meaningful if you're able to answer the questions, to resolve the misunderstandings, and you're able to present what your faith is. Like they would see something on the news today and they'll be like, hey, but yeah, that guy might be a Muslim, but Muslims are not like that. What I've learned from civic engagement is that your presence matters and being in contact is always a good thing, especially for the Muslims, because we're constantly bombarded with negativity. When it Right. comes to interfaith, my first exposure to like the Global Interfaith Forum was the Parliament of the World's Religions in Toronto in 2018. What I felt from the Parliament, both in 2018 and the one in Chicago last year, was people come together for various reasons. Some may just come together and say, hey, let's just celebrate your faith as you celebrate my faith. Some mm-hmm. will come together and say, I'm going to preach to you and you better listen to me because inside I feel you're wrong and I'm right. Some will come to enlighten others while learning from others. So for me, in 2023, the Parliament was about teaching the people what is Sharia compared to what the world has heard. And that's kind of become my mission because we want people to know about Islam for what it is and not what people are making it to be. And that was well received. I want us to have real talk, be part of real conversations, to answer real questions that people may have, and we can agree to disagree, but I could walk away saying to myself, I had the ability to answer this person's question. What responsibility do we as faith leaders have in this world? We play a role also. I think it's about time we stand up and fulfill our part. And that is to learn from each other, to educate each other, to bring our congregations together so that they see the humanity of the other, and thereby we mold our society into a better society. Because if we don't do that, and we constantly preach to our choir, we are contributing towards the fall of this world. That's my belief.
That was Imam Azhar Subedar talking about what he feels his life mission is to bring understanding about the religious community of Islam. When I was younger, I had an experience that really shaped my beliefs about the importance of understanding other people. When I was in high school, I was asked to be on an honor council. I remember when I was first asked to do it that I thought I was going to be super harsh, like, why are you breaking the rules? That's not good. You're not supposed to do that kind of thing, because that was just not the kind of person that I was. But I remember my first ever meeting, the person who was brought to us had done something I thought was very insignificant. He poured some soda into another student's soup during lunch. It was the beginning of the year. He was trying to make some friends, I guess. He was not from the United States. He was from China. He didn't speak much English. And the other student did not react well and went to the teachers about it. And the student was brought to us, and we were supposed to kind of, you know, explain to him why that was wrong and give some sort of punishment. And I just remember thinking, like, if I did that to one of my friends, I would have gotten away with it. Why does he have to come to us? Why does he have to go through this whole process and be embarrassed and be confused and be frustrated about it? Even though I thought I was going to be one of the harshest people there, I was maybe the only person that really defended him. And I think that that's how it is when we're confronted with these situations where we have to really try to understand people, where we have to be put in a position of empathy, that's what ends up happening. When we try to understand people, we want to defend them. And I think that goes for all sorts of faith traditions and religions as well. We might think they're different or think that they have different values than us, but when we really examine them, we see the value and why it's worth defending.
This patience that he has with people who don't understand his faith and are coming up against it, either with false stories in the news, perhaps someone who's done a criminal act and they'll mention their faith, which I would say most times if I hear about a criminal act, I don't go searching like, gosh, I wonder if they're Christian. I wonder if they're Jewish, you know. It just seems like a lot gets put onto a particular faith that has nothing to do with the actual faith itself, and more with the actions of an individual.
I felt a real resonance with what the Imam was speaking to us about, because when the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints comes under scrutiny in the public square, I'm often told what I believe and what my religion does and what I stand for, without anyone really asking me those questions and wondering what my response would actually consist of. And so to hear him say, you have to get out, you have to represent your religion positively, you have to be essentially in control of the narrative. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it can be hard to do, but if we want people to understand what our tradition is, we got to get out there and got to tell them.
I felt so much commonality as he talked about some difficult times, and that he learned to see that what seemed like challenges might have been opportunities God gave him that led him to these remarkable places, being on White House counsel, working with governments, and being given what he needed, whether he knew it or not, for his people to explain their actual beliefs. So that whole loving the stranger, A, we can do that by getting to know the stranger, and then they're not the stranger.
Yeah.
The other thing is his call to love people even who might be judging him and have the patience to educate. Many thanks to Imam Azhar Subedar for speaking with us today. This episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team includes Aaliyah Ebert, Leah King, Katerina Martinich, Josh Orton, and James Sturdivant. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen and Lauren Sandberg. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. If you want to promote interfaith understanding in the world, be sure and leave a comment or review where you get your podcasts, on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple. That helps spread the word. Find us on Twitter, In Good Faith Pod, Instagram and Facebook, In Good Faith Podcast, and our YouTube page is youtube.com/in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join us again soon, right here, In Good Faith.
Hi, I'm Stephen Cap Perry, host of In Good Faith. Nothing captivates me more than people setting out on an adventure. especially if it's a place I wish I could go to or a subject I wish I knew more about, but I don't live in the right place or I don't have the equipment or the expertise. I'm telling you about a podcast from our BYU Radio family of podcasts, an award-winning podcast called Constant Wonder. With host Marcus Smith, you'll be expanding your horizons on all kinds of discovery. It could be science, it could be art, history, and more. Do you need that feeling of awe and wonder in your life more? I do, and I love it when I see how to experience that by hearing the stories of people who are doing and exploring all of those things that are so interesting to me. Check out the podcast, Constant Wonder,